Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine. Got a big show tonight. Going to talk a little Texas politics at 6:35 Central Time with Billy Horton. He's going to call in from Austin and give us some update on Texas, another one of our southern states. And then in the first half hour, in a few minutes, Amal Knight's going to call in and tell us about the VP selection, what he's been researching. Of course, we'll give our opinions too. But welcome, Catherine.
Hello, everybody.
And welcome, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, well, good to have y'all here, and I'm glad y'all are going to be here for me the next 2 weeks. I'm going to go ahead and start previewing, if you will. First things first, we're going to have a special Thursday show. Catherine, tell everybody about what we're going to have.
Well, the Young Democrats of Georgia are having their annual Murphy Award reception, and it's going to be like a awards show theme. So we're going to be live from the blue carpet on Thursday before the show begins, from about 6:30 to 7, talking with the people as they come in and do it kind of like a red carpet thing that you might see before an award show. I think it'll be fun and entertaining. So tune in. If you can't be there, of course, it'll be the place to be that night. But those of you who won't be able to be there, we hope you'll join us on the air.
Yes, and so that was all Catherine's idea, and I think it'll be good. You'll be down there. I'll be running the board from home because we've got to have that piece or it just didn't come off. But that'll be good. And then the next 2 weeks, we've already started, actually next 3 weeks, we've actually started putting the shows together. And I'll go ahead and preview them right off the bat. Next week, Jim Martin's campaign manager, Ellery Gould's going to be with us. We are going to probably have another guest to be secured. And then on July 6th, we're having the Public Service Commission voter form, the two gentlemen running for Public Service Commission on the Democratic side for the nomination. They're going to be on with us, and I think all of us were talking. We don't even know who we're going to vote for at this point. And so this voter form will help us, and we're some of the most informed people in Georgia politics, if you will. So I know that's good. And then the week after that, I'll actually be back then, and we'll do our preview of the Georgia primaries. And also we'll have on Dana Peterson out of New Orleans to talk to us about Louisiana politics, because they'll have just had their candidate qualifying that Friday before it'll end. So a lot of stuff going on the Kudzu Vine. But it's been a big week, and I guess last week we're so busy we couldn't get it to some of the topics, but we've had new Senate polls. We've had Senate campaign spots come out for this U.S. Senate race. We've had endorsements, and I've heard we may have more endorsements next week. Tim, any thoughts on the Senate race, any of these things we've seen?
Well, the poll you made passing reference to was the Rasmussen poll on June the 10th. We had Chambliss ahead of Cardwell, 52-37, ahead of Jones, 56-33, and ahead of Martin, 52-36. Those numbers seem to be holding steady from previous polling. But again, even though they keep saying that Vernon Jones is the favorite to win the Democratic nomination in the general election matchups, he's not doing very well.
Yes, and so that happened. And you know, we did have TV spots. I guess Josh Lanier's come up with a YouTube spot. Dale Cardwell's come out with now three spots that are TV ready. Right now they're just on the internet, but you know there are plans to, you know, put them somewhere on TV, wherever targeting's right. And then I guess we still hear of possible media buys from the Martin campaign, and you'd have to think with Rand Knight having some big endorsements coming in, there's a possibility there. Catherine, any thoughts on those spots?
I haven't looked at them. I never look at those online spots. I just don't. I don't know. I don't look at them. But do you know if that poll came out before or after the union endorsements?
Well, the Rasmussen poll, it's kind of funny. It's almost irrelevant. Well, I will say irrelevant. They don't poll on Rand Knight on those head-to-head matchups, and it seems kind of unfair in that the man, if the AFL-CIO endorses the fella, then, I mean, he should be polled on as a legitimate contender. I was hoping that Insider Advantage, when they did their presidential poll, which we must talk about here in a minute, I was hoping that they would have also polled down the ticket among Democrats only the head-to-head matchup between the three in the primary, because the matchups with Chambliss is very, you know, it's very insightful us to look at electability, but then to know who's actually going to win, that's a very different question, and Insider Advantage and Strategic Vision were giving us those numbers. But it didn't include Rand Knight, so it's hard to...
Yeah, it's hard to...
It might impact how Jones, Cardwell, and Martin do, but it wouldn't actually have the man that got the endorsement.
Right.
Yes, but I guess segue, and this will bring us into the VP talk at the national politics with Amal Nayak. There was the presidential poll that came out among Insider Advantage. You know, I had heard Matt Towery the other week, and he told us why his polling was better. Obviously, he's biased, but he did put good sound judgment with it. And then, lo and behold, we get this poll that shows that we have an absolute, honest-to-goodness horse race in Georgia.
Oh, mercy.
I mean, this thing is in margin of error territory. It actually showed Barr dropping 2 points, and it's still a close race. Tim, what are your first thoughts on that poll?
Well, you know, I was checking on the blogosphere as soon as this thing hit, and the GOP went to immediately screaming about this poll. They did not doubt the validity of the poll as far as it was taken. What they wanted to know was why neither Ralph Nader nor Cynthia McKinney was included in this poll, and I'm going to assume it's what you had told me earlier in the week, David, that neither one of those people actually has a party nomination and that Bob Barr does. Is that what you think?
I think that's a fair reason to leave him out or leave him or her out is because they don't have the nomination and Bob Barr does, and that's why you would include. I tell you this, I don't think Cynthia McKinney nor Ralph Nader gets near 6% in Georgia like it's showing Bob Barr would today.
No.
No.
Yes. Catherine, your thoughts on the poll?
Oh, I thought it was awesome. I was amazed. I was absolutely flabbergasted. I honestly was. I was like, I just thought, found it was like 43-44 or something, 43 Obama.
Right.
I couldn't believe it. I practically fell off my chair.
Yes.
I think it's great. I think it's great, and I think that the response or the I don't know if that was a response to that poll, but very shortly thereafter we learned that, you know, Barack Obama is bringing more people into Georgia, and so I think that it's really refreshing to see that someone's paying attention to us. It makes it feel like, you know, all this work that we've all been doing all these years, it might actually pay off.
Yes, and actually just before the poll, they were talking about Georgia, this year's Ohio, being a big battleground state. And my thinking was, if Georgia's in play, then, you know, this is just covering the spread, if you will. We've already won the game, although I guess there are scenarios in which Georgia could be what puts you over 270. But I still have to think, if we're winning Georgia, we're winning so many other places. We're, you know, 350 electoral votes, and this is just gravy, if you will. Which
David.
There's
no counting those chickens.
No. What I'm saying is, but to me, it raises the bar in other ways. It's saying then that means if we're that close on the presidential race, why can't we just get the extra points we need, take the U.S. Senate race? Why can't we take all the competitive, targeted state House, state Senate seats that we actually have candidates in place for? So to me, that's why it raises the stakes. It's what's
I might add something else on that, David. I bet there are two Democratic incumbent congressmen in Georgia who stood up and cheered when they saw that poll, right?
Yes. When I've talked to other folks, I don't think there's a single congressman in America that's a Democrat that's in danger. I mean, I'd really, if, unless they're going to get beaten in the primary, like, say, Bill Jefferson, I don't think any Democratic congressman in America will be defeated on election.
Wow.
That's just what I feel. Well,
you know, David, this is being recorded.
Hey, why don't you put that down with Hillary Clinton's going to win Ohio and Texas? Remember, I'm the person that called that. You know my record. I'm a glossy.
I know. I'm just saying.
So, but I think it's time to talk a little VP selection. Amal, are you there with us?
I am. Hi, Dave. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, welcome, Amal. You're also here with Tim and Catherine. I'm sure you know them because you're no stranger to Democratic politics in the South.
Absolutely. Yeah. Nice talk with y'all.
Yeah, thank you for being here.
Good evening.
Yeah, well, I guess you've been listening to us talk about the presidential race and how it's affecting Georgia, but then that brings it into the who's going to be the VP candidates. And I guess let's go ahead and just start with the Democratic side since that's what we're talking about. Amal, I guess the obvious choice for Obama to have to consider and then do whatever with is Hillary Clinton. What do you think there?
Well, I think, you know, he certainly does have to consider Senator Clinton because she did have such a strong primary performance. But at the end of the day, there's just so much, you know, as far as governing that would make that pick difficult. You know, you have a former president that would be involved in the administration in some undefined capacity. And I think it really cuts to the against the theme that's made Obama so successful thus far, which is change and turning the page on the Bushes and the Clintons. So at the end of the day, I'm sure that, you know, the right things will be said and that Senator Clinton will be considered, but I just don't see her being the pick. It really adds so much, and it would really help Republicans get their base out, which is not clear at all that Senator McCain is going to do that. But if they had a chance to vote against Hillary Clinton on a ticket, I think the Republican base would be pretty fired up.
Yes, but speaking of firing up the Republican base, don't the Republicans have the new Hillary Clinton and Michelle Obama? It seems like that's what they're trying to create.
They're trying awfully hard to create, you know, make Michelle Obama something she's not, which is, you know, they really are. It's disappointing to see what they're doing to, by all accounts, who's, you know, someone that's a good mother, someone that's really come from humble backgrounds and worked her way up to be a successful lawyer. But you're right. Some of the comments she's made are certainly unfortunate when taken out of context. And Barack Obama is a very likable person, an inspirational figure. And it seems like the way they're going to try to hurt him is to go after Michelle Obama, which is unfortunate, but it's a reality and it's clear what's going on.
Yes, and you just said good mother, successful lawyer, comes from humble background. You just described Hillary Clinton at the same time. So
right.
She is a lot like Hillary Clinton, but it's just, what is your opinion of the two ladies? I think they're both fine ladies that have been vilified unnecessarily.
I agree completely. Yeah. And, you know, when you say someone is like a Hillary Clinton, that can be nothing but a compliment. You know, this is just something where the old, you know, Republican playbook where you go after, you have like a, you know, really likable person like a Bill Clinton or a Barack Obama that can relate to folks. And so what do? You go after, you know, strong wives that have had great careers and are wonderful mothers. And it's just the old tired playbook. And just like it didn't work in 92 or 96, I don't think it's going to work in 2008.
Yes. Well, I guess if it's not Hillary Clinton, then who are some of the choices on the Democratic side you're seeing?
Well, y'all are talking about that insider vantage poll, you know, 44 McCain, 43 Obama, 6% Barr. And I will say, I don't think that, I agree with all of you, I don't think that Cynthia McKinney or Ralph Nader are going to have any impact at all in this. So even if they are able to win their respective nominations, I just don't think it's going to impact anything. So looking at that poll, you know, local person, Sam Nunn, seems to be, you know, someone that would be considered strongly. But it's really going to, for Senator Obama, I think it's going to come down to whether he wants to follow, you know, the Al Gore model of a vice presidency or the Dick Cheney figure. You know, not a Dick Cheney, but someone that, you know, George Bush picked Vice President Cheney clearly to strengthen up some of his weaknesses, whereas Bill Clinton picked Al Gore to reinforce his theme. So I think the most instructive way to look at this pick is to say, okay, does he want someone that emphasizes the change theme or brings in experience? And Sam Nunn certainly would help bring a whole lot of experience, important experience, and would help, I think would help a lot in Georgia. I don't know what your thoughts are on that. You know, Senator Nunn's obviously been out of office, but I think he really would be a huge asset, especially in that state.
Well, it's funny. This is my thought, and we'll pass it around to Catherine and Tim for their thoughts. As far as, like, Sam Nunn bringing in, you know, rural folks in middle Georgia or whatever it may be that voted for him, then that's great to add people to win state Senate and state House seats down the ballot, maybe do a little better in congressional districts, maybe pick off the PSC seats or something like that. But as far as excitement, bringing it to the ticket, if I'm outside of Georgia where that's the only place he's going to have that kind of impact, I'd be kind of like blah about the 70-year-old Sam Nunn. So, I mean, I have one way it's good, but then for the other 49 states, I don't think it's that wonderful. Tim, your thoughts on it?
Well, I would have to think that one thing you'd have to watch with Senator Nunn is he's 69 years old, going to be 70 his next birthday. And I was wondering if that would sort of water down the age issue since Senator McCain's going to be 72 in August.
Amal, your thoughts on that?
Right, no, that's clearly the thing. You know, with a guy like a Senator Nunn or even a Joe Biden, you know, shores up some weaknesses in the experience in the foreign policy heft. But that, it cuts against change, it cuts against youth, and you're right, it really does affect the strong undercurrent in this election, which is John McCain's age. So there's pluses and minuses for all that. And another dangerous thing about picking someone that's so different than Senator Obama is that, you know, especially with the role that Dick Cheney's played in the current administration, you don't want it to seem as Senator Obama is going to really defer to someone else on these major issues and these major decisions. So there's something to be – a lot to be said, I think, personally about Senator Nunn. And I do think he has actually more of a name and carries more heft outside of Georgia than we may think, even though he's been out of politics for a while. But certainly they're going to have to consider the age issue and right, and they'll have to spend some time, frankly, now reintroducing him to the American public, because, you know, a lot of folks might not know exactly who Sam Nunn is outside of the Beltway and folks like us who, you know, talk and listen on these shows.
Yeah. Catherine, any quick thoughts on Sam Nunn since he's in state?
Well, I'm a big, you know, I have a lot of respect and admiration for Sam Nunn, and I think if he were a little bit younger, I would be all for that. But I think the youth, I think one of the things we really have going for us with Senator Obama as our candidate is his youth, and the counterpoint with him and McCain is very strong. And I think that, like you alluded to, David, if we bring an elder statesman in as a vice presidential candidate, then we kind of lose the ability to highlight that counterpoint, and that's just my opinion. And I also think I don't know that much about Sam Nunn's experience. I mean, I know a little bit about what he's been doing, but I think that one of the things that people might be looking for, it obviously might be the inside baseball people, is –
Hello?
I'm here.
I don't know what was going on there with my connection. Is Catherine still with us?
I think we lost her.
I think that's where the changing around was. It was Catherine's phone. So I was like, I thought it was me and the whole show had crashed or something. Well, that's good. Well, let's kind of pick up on all of your thought. I think you're absolutely right. There's two camps, if you are, two strains of thought. The wise old hand or more change, a dynamic face to reinforce. Kind of give us some names that fit into each category.
Well, if you're looking at the Al Gore, you know, more of the same, a lot of change, youth. Tim Kaine from Virginia is a swing state. Ted Strickland, governor of Ohio. Governor Sebelius from Kansas. Evan Bayh in Indiana, and I think that all polls show now that Indiana is possibly a swing state here. And a guy who's pulled his name out of the vice presidential running, but someone I've been a native North Carolinian, someone I've been a fan of for a long time, John Edwards, I think is still, you know, worth mentioning in that group. And you look at the more, you know, the senior statesmen, the folks that really add a lot of heft but take away maybe from the youth and change theme, along with Senator Nunn, you have Senator Biden, who was on Meet the Press this morning. I'm sure you had the opportunity to watch that. And he said he, though he doesn't want it, he would take it if offered. Jim Webb maybe is a little bit could fit into both groups. Senator Clinton, you know, very experienced as well. And I think Chris Dodd never really was in the running seriously, but certainly with the unfortunate, you know, citywide loan issue that's come up, he's probably off that list, but he was someone that was mentioned, I think, amongst a lot of folks. I don't know what you guys think really on which one of the two for Senator Obama. You know, I think the real decision is to pick which track you want to take, whether you want to reinforce the strengths or show up the weaknesses. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
I think he's in a position where he doesn't have to shore up his weaknesses. He can keep on with the change theme. I think he has that luxury, if you will, to not have to play too safe. Tim, your thoughts?
Well, I was wondering if I could really get out on the edge and throw a name at y'all and see what you thought of it. If you want to talk about change, how about Mayor Bloomberg of New York City?
Ooh.
That would be change. That would be change. You know, I think I respect Mayor Bloomberg a lot. I think he's done some great things in New York, and you know, he's certainly been able to add a lot. Not the least of which is the fact that he's an extremely wealthy man, which is you know, we're not having trouble raising money, but it would not hurt for him to be able to kick in some of his own funds and bring in his fundraising apparatus. But that being said, you know, initial thought is that Mike Bloomberg doesn't seem like he'd be anyone's vice president. I mean, you don't get to be where this person has been in business and politics, being able to play that role of sidekick. And the geographic diversity on that, you know, kind of bothers me as well. You know, New York is pretty much locked up. I would think that Mayor Bloomberg would probably help us a lot in Florida. I mean, that's certainly, you know, something interesting to talk about.
Well, I wanted to ask one more question, and it's right along those lines. You said you didn't think Mayor Bloomberg would be the type of person that could accept a job like vice president. And the obvious question comes, can Senator Clinton?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's a really, really great question. I mean, I would, you know, I think she would take the job. If every indication seems as if she wants it, I think she would bring enormous strengths and weaknesses to the position. I think she would take it because she's in a different position than a Mike Bloomberg in that, you know, if Mike Bloomberg, you know, has other things outside of politics that he's really focused in on. Senator Clinton is a politician and clearly wants to still be president of the United States. And say what you will about the job of vice president, it is clearly the best way to move to the front of the line. So I think, you know, I don't think that this was what she wanted, but I think she'd take it, and I think she'd really do a lot of things about it. And you know, it would be extremely historic, obviously, to have Senator Obama and Senator Clinton on the same ticket. There'd be a lot of folks who'd be real happy about that. I don't know. What do you guys think about Senator Clinton on the ticket?
Well, I've been pretty much for it for a while. I think there are too many, and this kind of leads to my next question, I think there's too many women that are, say, 50 and older that were just so excited about the chance of history making. They just think this is their chance to see a woman elected, you know, be at the top of the ticket or number two on the ticket. And that's just, it's almost felt like it was taken away from them in some ways. I mean, no, although it wasn't, it just, you know, it has that feel to it. And that was my next question. If not Hillary Clinton, is there another woman that Senator Obama could put on the ticket? And I've actually speculated on our Kudzuvine question of the week, Blanche Lincoln Lambert, somebody I would look hard at. But Amal, what are some other women that he could look at besides Hillary Clinton?
You know, it's actually funny that we, you know, I was talking to this with some, I'm up in D.C. right now, I was talking to some Hill staffers that were were basically having this exact same conversation yesterday evening. And the two women that came up repeatedly were Governor Sebelius from Kansas and Claire McCaskill from Missouri. You know, Senator McCaskill has been an Obama supporter for a really long time, came out there and has been a forceful supporter and helped him win the state in the primary. So, and she, you know, she's really popular in that state, could help swing it. And she has a very impressive life story herself. Governor Sebelius was a, you know, very popular governor in an extremely red state that could also potentially be on the map if she was on it, just because people forget, you know, Senator Obama's mother is from Kansas, so there's some obvious ties there. The one negative, I think, a little bit against at least Governor Sebelius that people have been saying is that, you know, the vice president really has to be able to be on the attack, has to go be able to do the things that that Senator Obama can't do himself, and there's some question about whether Governor Sebelius is the right person for that, given her response to the State of the Union, which I don't think was well received pretty recently. And Governor Napolitano from Arizona has also been mentioned to kind of, you know, make McCain scared in his own backyard. But I think out of the three, I would think that McCaskill and Sebelius would be the ones that are most likely to be considered. But that being said, you know, is it a slap in the face to all those Clinton supporters that worked so hard for their candidate to pick another woman?
I'm back. I'm sorry, we had a thunderstorm. I think if it's going to be a woman over 50, it's got to be Hillary Clinton, or you're going to have a lot of very, you know, it's not like any vagina will do. You know, we all supported Hillary, a lot of us. I did. And I mean, I think Senator Obama is a fantastic candidate. I'm 100% behind him now. But I think there's a lot of women who, you know, just, oh well, you know, Kathleen Sebelius will do. We can't have Hillary Clinton. I don't think that's gonna fall well on the really avid Clinton supporters. I think it would be a big mistake. I think it'd be better to have, like, you know, one of the other people you mentioned, except Tim Kaine.
Why are you not a Tim Kaine fan?
Tim Kaine would be a disaster, in my opinion. You know, he ran as a anti-death penalty, fiscally responsible. You know, that was the two things in his campaign. Well, he's caved on the death penalty, and the state's finances are in a mess. So I just think that you know, he maybe needs to run his state a little bit better before we have him running as on a national ticket.
Right.
Plus, he's anti-choice.
Well, yeah, that certainly would be a strong negative in a lot.
He's
of
not
people,
just anti-choice. I mean, he's avidly anti-choice.
Right. Well, there's two other folks that I meant to mention that you know, since we do have some Clinton supporters, it sounds like. What about Evan Bayh or Wesley Clark? You know, you're not picking Senator Clinton, but these are strong Clinton allies, and they both add a lot to the ticket.
I think Bayh, with his gubernatorial background, is a very excellent choice.
I think Wes Clark would be a great choice. I've always liked him. I think he does have that kind of aggressive, but I think he can be aggressive when he, like you were talking about, one of the disadvantages maybe of Kathleen Sebelius. I think he can be tough. He's been tough over the last couple of years. He was a Clinton supporter, but he's also, you know, got the military experience. I think he'd be a great choice. I've always thought that for either of them.
And you know, especially with General Clark, you know, he brings a lot of the change things. He's a Washington outsider. He would help with a lot of the Clinton folks. And he's got the military experience. So,
he's not as young as you might think he is, he has a youthful exuberance. You know, he's youthful even though he is not that young. But.
Yes, and he does hit the change. Now, we do need to probably move to the other side of the aisle just to make sure we give a little bit of coverage, not full time, but a little bit of coverage. And I know Amal's done some research on this side too. Who are some of the names on the Republican side we're hearing?
Well, it seems like the Republicans have a really shorter list of folks that are really being considered heavily. A lot of them governors. Charlie Crist from Florida, Governor Pawlenty, Governor Jindal from Louisiana, and former Representative Portman from Ohio, who has a strong economic background. And another person that isn't necessarily named all the time as a potential Republican vice presidential nominee, but it's been one of the strongest McCain guys out there, Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, I think would add a lot to that ticket. And he can be a fierce attack dog, like, again, on Meet the Press this morning. He really went after Biden and Obama. It was pretty effective. And then the wild card that's probably going to disappoint all Democrats is Senator Lieberman. So I think that seems to be, you know, the kind of the conventional picks. You know, the safer picks to me seem to be the governors, Crist or Pawlenty. Pawlenty was a strong McCain person really early, and Crist has some real obvious advantages where he almost would take Florida off the map. He's young, southern governor, would be, you know, would keep a lot of those conservative folks happy. There's also, of course, I forgot to mention Mitt Romney, who would bring in some money. The business community just loves him. And Mike Huckabee deserves to probably be in the conversation just because of how well he did in the primary. But he might have stayed in there a little bit too long to get serious consideration.
Yes, you mentioned a lot of names I hadn't really thought about. One thing I want to throw out there is what could be just a disastrous scenario for the Republicans. With Lindsey Graham and Charlie Crist, they're both single men. And
right.
There are, you know, unseemingly rumors around both men that they could be homosexual. I personally have no problem with that. But I'm not a religious conservative rock-rib Republican. What happens if you put one of these gentlemen on the ticket, the rumors either just swirl around or they're actually become to be, they uncloseted, if you will, and then the Republican right base just flocks to the constitutional candidate or a Roy Moore ticket or whatever it may be and just decimates the Republicans, and they end up winning, you know, Utah, Idaho, and five other states. I mean, could that be too risky of a pick, even though Charlie Crist right now is very popular?
Right. I mean, you know, it is a very, very unfortunate fact that you know, there's these whisper campaigns going on about these two gentlemen. You know, Governor Crist, I think, also, in addition, he has an odd predicament for him to be in. There's, you know, these rumors about his sexual preference, but then he's also had a nasty divorce where there's some, you know, womenizing sorts of issues going on as well. So I think rather the latter of the two is going to be the bigger problem and the bigger hindrance to him being selected. That being said, you know, the fact that both of them are single really does hurt them, because they do, you know, it's just a better picture of the convention and everywhere else to have a guy and or a woman and their families and their kids. And so those two things will cut against them. But, you know, Florida does have an awful lot of electoral votes. It's a really expensive place. And, you know, you put a very popular governor and won't have to spend too much money down there. I think that's pretty appealing.
Yeah. Tim, give any thoughts you have on the GOP side.
Well, I just have the obvious question. Will Senator McCain feel a little extra pressure, do you think, to pick a much younger running mate to balance the ticket?
Clearly it's going to be someone younger, but let's face it, there's not that many.
I mean, we're talking much younger, somebody in their 40s, something like
right.
that.
Right. No, I think clearly it has to be someone that is younger, and that there will be a significant pressure because, you know, not only to balance it out and make people feel really reassured and kind of add some youthful excitement around him, but this is also going to be the presumptive successor to Governor McCain, to Senator McCain. So I think there's going to, but there's also a huge danger for them, a huge danger for picking someone that's way too young. And I think, you know, that's what knocks to me Governor Jindal out of the discussion, because he's 36 years old. He's 1 year older. 1 year older than the constitutionally mandated age of 35 to be president. You know, you have a 36-year-old and a, 71-year-old on the same ticket, and that's just, you know, that is a huge problem. So you can't – it's again, it goes back to the same sort of dilemma that Senator Obama has, is you want to strengthen up some areas but you don't want to have someone that's so different than you in that area that it really underlines what your weaknesses are.
Could a pick of Jindal be much like Walter Mondale made of Geraldine Ferraro? Look, I know odds are I'm going to lose this thing anyway. Maybe I can set Jindal up for the future. And this is a man that adopted a girl from Bangladesh. He's obviously not the closed-minded stereotype of Republicans. Maybe he says, hey, this is my chance to have a little bit of legacy on my party and something about it I don't like, the Karl Rove, I had a black baby crap that you see, by putting Jindal so much more forward for the future.
You know, there's always that option, but I think the 36 is just is extremely young. I think that, you know, even though Governor Jindal is pretty much a rock star amongst conservative Republicans because of his, you know, amazing background, really, and he's extremely, extremely socially conservative. I mean, this guy, Jindal, is way far to the right of McCain on pretty much every social issue. That being said, there's still going to be people that are uncomfortable pulling the lever for this guy and, you know, being the vice president. So there's a lot of things that cut against him. I mean, yeah, it's possible that, you know, Dave, to answer your question, that he picks this person and really would, you know, make history for the Republican Party and for in national politics. But I just think there's, you know, just a few issues around Governor Jindal that are going to eliminate him. But, you know, just for as an Indian American person to see someone, you know, that's really not that much older than I am being considered for something like this is shows that, you know, America, there's a lot of opportunities. And even though I disagree with them on pretty much every policy issue, I know that the Indian American community would be just wild about the idea. And not that's not important enough to swing votes because there's not enough Indian Americans to actually swing votes anywhere, but there's certainly with the fundraising piece it could be significant.
No women? We don't know any no Republican women? It just seems, I mean, I don't can't think of anybody aside from, you know, they've always been talking about Condoleezza Rice all along, but I think it would probably, especially if Senator Obama does not pick Hillary Clinton or another woman, I would think that the Republicans might want to do that, but I don't know who it would be.
The governor of Alaska, I think, is the one that she's a reformer. She's the one that really comes up again and again. She's very young. She actually, I think, recently just had a child and, you know, former mayor of Anchorage, Alaska, a reformer, really came in there and is wildly popular up there, came in and cleaned up some things. But that's the, you know, that's the really the main Republican woman that gets mentioned. But, you know, I don't know if she's a serious consideration. She's a relatively, like Governor Jindal, has not been governor for that long, even though they're popular. And, you know, Alaska is, it'd be completely, you know, a new thing in national politics to have a vice presidential pick from, you know, Alaska. So I think those things cut against her. But you're right, that's something. And that's why there's great benefit here in waiting to see what the other person does.
Well, that's that was going to be my next question. What do you think? Do you think the Republicans are going to wait until their convention?
I think they're both going to wait just as long as they can.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I would think they'd wait till the convention. I mean, because, you know, you really would, if you're picking, you really want to know who the other person's picked. Because if Obama picks an Evan Bayh, then maybe Tim Pawlenty makes a whole lot more sense to, you know, to pick up some votes up in Minnesota, you know, the Midwestern type person. If Charlie Crist is the pick in Florida, then, you know, maybe a wild card like a you know, Bloomberg makes even less, you know, less possible because Florida's not going to be in play anyway. So, you know, if McCain just doubles down and goes way off the charts and gets just, you know, a former general or something, and, you know, then maybe you do need a Sam Nunn if you're an Obama. So it's just really – I think critical here to know what the other side's doing. I think both of them are going to wait just as long as they can. So it was great to see Senator Clinton, you know, say, okay, this is going to take a while, let him make the decision, because the worst thing that could happen for Democrats is to have this thing be rushed and have the Republicans, you know, really get to map out, okay, what do we need to do in reaction? And I think also this year the vice presidential pick is going to be much more important than in a lot of other years, simply because, you know, there's Senator Obama is such a new figure to the national scene, and you know, is relatively inexperienced in national politics. And John McCain, you know, his age is going to be a concern. There's ageism is a real issue in America. There's going to be a lot of people concerned about his age. And because, you know, frankly, he's admitted that he's not an expert on the economy, he's going to need someone that's going to help him on that. So I, this year with these two candidates, these two extraordinary and fascinating candidates, I think that the vice presidential pick is going to be a lot more important than it may have been in years past.
Yes, I guess just kind of segueing into some Texas politics, since that was our second topic, we're waiting for Billy Horton to call in. Hey, Bailey Hutchinson, she's been in the U.S. Senate for about 14 years now. Is she showing up on anybody's radar as a female VP pick for McCain, given her tenure, if you will?
Yeah, she seems to be off the radar, maybe because they're, you know, they're really in different wings of the Republican Party. You know, it's not like McCain and Kay Bailey Hutchinson were natural allies for a lot of reasons. And she also seems to want the job of governor of Texas rather than vice president. But that would be someone that is somewhat surprising that given, you know, her, you know, enormous popularity in Texas and among conservative Republicans and her long experience in Republican politics, that she's not mentioned more often.
Yeah. Well, Amal, thank you for joining us and talking about VP selections with us.
I really enjoyed it. Y'all have fun the rest of the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, well, I know that this is the first time we've been on the Burnt Orange Report, which is, I believe, the premier blog for Texas politics. Is that what you understand, Catherine?
Yeah, uh-huh.
That is the first one, so we want to do a little Texas politics, you know, before we get our call in. I do know that the Senate race, Rick Noriega, the Democratic nominee for Texas Senate, was really a big, big deal on the blogosphere, and his campaign certainly had a lot of momentum, still may have a lot of momentum, but there was a poll that just came out this month that showed that, you know, while he was 4 points down in a Research 2000 poll in May, and the Rasmussen showed him four down, and with Cornyn, the current Republican senator, being under 50%, you know, 4-point divide, that was really like a great pickup opportunity. But then this latest poll by Rasmussen says Cornyn 52, Noriega 35. Tim, were you surprised by that change in numbers?
Yeah, so surprised, as a matter of fact, that was the first question I was going to ask Mr. Horton. Exactly where does this race stand? Is he 4 points behind, or is he 17 points behind, and is this thing out of hand and not reachable for the Democrats?
Yes, but that shows me how fluid these things are. You know, maybe he's not 4, but he's probably not 17. But then that 17-point divide looked a lot like our Georgia and our Alabama, those Senate races where it looked, and South Carolina, they look so out of hand, but maybe with the right candidate doing the right things, it can close down into 4 points that quickly. Also, this poll, I believe, was taken pre-Big Bad John Cornyn's video. And if you have not seen it, I know it was linked on Daily Kos, you can actually go to John Cornyn's official campaign site, because apparently he thinks this video is good. But if you have not seen it, Catherine, Tim, have y'all seen this thing?
I have not seen it.
Oh, my word.
I've heard about it.
I tried to go and look for a MP3 player, so some type of file I could load onto our show so we could hear the music, because the visuals just do nothing compared to the audio. Imagine, you know, these country western songs that are kind of almost like a rap song. The guy talks, kind of like the Dukes of Hazzard, you know, was the Waylon Jennings told the story at the opening.
Yeah, uh-huh.
It's this kind of song talking about Big Bad John, and it has, you know, bullwhip sound effect. And it really, when they say Big Bad John, I hearken back to the Big Big Taste honeycomb commercial. I mean, it's that bad. It's so cheesy. And, I mean, like, I think when it was posted on Daily Kos, they were like, you know, no words to describe this. It was just that crazy. And I got to think that this thing may be so cheesy.
David,
a few points.
Did they actually use the classic country song by Jimmy Dean in this thing.
You know a little bit more about this genre of music. Is there a Big Bad John song?
There was a huge, huge song about 45 years ago by Jimmy Dean, probably the biggest song he ever had, and he talked through this song about a big, strong man that worked in the mines and this and that and the other. Big John.
But now Jimmy Dean bears no
resemblance to John Cornyn, by the way.
No, it is an ill-fitting thing they've put on here. He doesn't fit the cowboy image. But let me ask you this. Is this the Jimmy Dean that makes the sausage?
It is.
Well, I feel like I'm owed some sausage if I've had to listen to the remake. I mean, this thing is just... I mean, if you go to johncornyn.com, his website's actually decent, but it's the second video down because there's a video of him giving remarks to the GOP convention in Texas. But it's this burnt orange looking. I mean, I guess it's the same kind of orange color. Is the blog we're talking about with John put in the background with him in a cowboy hat and you just hit play, and you get this Big Bad John video. It's just...
Oh, my God.
I'll tell you this, Tim. It makes the Coverdale singing grandma commercial seem tolerable.
Oh.
And I don't know if you remember that commercial from...
Yes, that made me drink a lot of alcohol, David.
Catherine, that may have been before your time in Georgia, but the Paul Coverdale, when he first ran, he had this singing grandma, and I forgot what she sang, but it was just horrible. And I was at the conference in Atlanta, the technology conference, and some lady that worked for the Coverdale campaign was bragging about that campaign. I was like, oh, my word. I guess she's going to start bragging about Rock the Boat Johnny next. I don't know. That was from 96. That was another classic. What is it about campaign songs? There's just not that many good ones. I mean...
No, there aren't any good ones. Are there any good ones?
I mean, you know, Vote Miss Angela. I mean, I'm sure it had its fans. But you got, you know, Vote Miss Angela, Rock the Boat Johnny, the singing grandpa, and now Big Bad John Cornyn. And so... That was some things. I mean, maybe we've talked a little Texas politics. And, of course, if you're listening to the show and want to call in, you can call in at 646-478-4503.
David, yes, can I jump in with a question about Texas politics? Let's assume for a minute that this latest poll is true. If it is true, where do guys like Nick Lampson and Congressman Rodriguez stand, who are in tenuous positions at best?
Well, Lampson won last year with George W. Bush, or not last year. Did he win last year or 4 years ago?
No, he won in 06. Him and Rodriguez, both, you know, Rodriguez won in a runoff with Bonilla.
Yes, and so, but I just have to think that, like I said, once again, I really think all the congressmen are safe because they have a district within the entire state of Texas. I mean, so I think they're safe, but, I mean, this is a question for an expert, you know, not somebody living three states over that's never been in Texas. And so that's, you know, something to consider. Now, Tim, I guess it's close to the time. Why don't you go ahead and do your outrage of the week, and then we'll close out with some other topics.
Sure will. I was surfing around the political sites on the net the other day. I, like all political people, I do that all the time. And on a unnamed Republican site, I found an ad by none other than our esteemed senior senator from Georgia, Saxby Chambliss. And you're going to love this, guys. It said, and I quote, "Enjoying paying high prices for gas? Thank a Democrat." And so Chambliss is doing what all Republicans seem to be doing nowadays, which is attempting to blame Democrats for high gasoline prices. Well, that's not a bad idea politically, I suppose. Obviously, the high price of gasoline is weighing on everyone's mind. And poll after poll continues to show that the American people mistakenly believe that increased domestic drilling by the oil companies will lead to immediate relief at the gas pump. So Chambliss and the other Republicans are screaming, drill and drill now. And of course, the reason we haven't already done that, they say, is the fault of the Democrats and the radical environmentalists. They think they've got themselves a winning issue, and they're not going to let a little thing like the truth get in their way. And the truth, obviously, is far different. For instance, the GOP is talking about opening up the areas off the Atlantic and Pacific coast. Well, presently, about 79% of that area is already available for drilling because we can only control so far off the coast with our laws. The other 21% is mostly in our territorial waters and within sight of the U.S. mainland where drilling would least likely occur anyway. And old Saxby, along with the rest of that bunch, is saying that we should open up the Alaska National Wildlife Reserve. Now, that's an area about the size of South Carolina. It's pristine, and it's been off limits to any development. Last time I checked, by the way, only one oil company even wanted to drill there. Well, why is that? I guess they know something that old Saxby doesn't know, huh? Then Saxby's favorite line is to go on and say, well, if we'd started drilling 10 years ago, we'd not have these problems now. Really? I was wondering if Saxby remembers exactly what was going on up there in Congress 10 years ago. They weren't talking about drilling. It was 1998, and the only thing the Republican Congress was getting ready to drill was President Clinton when they tried to impeach him. And old Saxby was right there in the House as a member of the Congress. The Congress was too busy trying to destroy Bill Clinton to even think of doing anything else. Besides, I could ask the Republicans the same question. Starting in 2001, the Republicans ran everything for 6 years. Old Saxby, once again, was right there with them. Why didn't they act then? No, they did nothing. I might also add, for the benefit of these Republicans, that we are under a present executive order banning oil exploration off the coast. It was signed by none other than Bush 41, a Republican. So that in itself proves that the GOP was also in the middle of the drilling ban. Then there's that pesky little Energy Information Administration report from the Bush Department of Energy, which states in no uncertain terms that drilling started right now in these areas would not affect gas prices for upwards of 20 years. And of this report, old Saxby and the Republicans say not one thing. This issue, this drilling issue, is just one of many that reminds me of the importance of this election here in Georgia. Now, there are five Democrats running against Saxby Chambliss. I urge everyone listening to me tonight to find one of these candidates that you like and support them, because we've got to get rid of this guy. I bet that not one of you out there can think of one thing that Chambliss has ever done since he was elected. What big legislation has he written? What has he accomplished? And it takes my mind back to something that my brother told me about that he saw. 48 years ago, in October of 1960, Senator John Kennedy came to Warm Springs with Eleanor Roosevelt during his campaign for the presidency. And in a speech in front of the Little White House, he asked the crowd of several thousand Georgians a very simple question. And I quote, "What have the Republicans ever done for you?" he asked. Think about that this year, folks, and consider that when you think about Saxby Chambliss and this week's outrageous ad that he put on the internet, because he's a do-nothing senator and an embarrassment to Georgia, David.
Jim, so true. I guess we had just a little more time. There was a little thing that happened at the very end of the week, and it was just a real, you know, missed opportunity for us. Republican State Senator Joseph Carter,
mm-hmm.
and he's from the
yep.
Tifton area, I believe. He is filed to run for State Superior Court Judge, and he thus is vacating his seat, or he's not running for re-election, and he was the only candidate. But had we had a Democrat in that seat, now, of course, he may have decided not to run, but if he really had this judicial mindset he wanted to go for anyway, then we would have won that seat by default. Or, worst-case scenario, we would have been running in a seat, you know, where it was a new person. If somehow the Republicans maneuvered it where he dropped off and they put somebody new in. I know it is going to be a special election now. It may coincide with the November ballot. That may allow us to recruit somebody, but it was just a reason why we should put more people in more seats. Catherine, yep. Your thoughts on this?
Oh, this kind of stuff drives me crazy. I mean, there's the other one, the guy from South Georgia who decided not to run. What's his name? At the last minute, and somebody else qualified. It's just frustrating, you're absolutely right. It's a missed opportunity. I would kind of be surprised if they let us put someone in there, but maybe they will.
Well, isn't it? But if it's a special election, it then reopens up. It's not. There is a way where he could have won off the ballot, and the Republicans put somebody in his place. But apparently, the way this is done, that's not that type of scenario.
We're looking at a nonpartisan special election,
but
right?
But now you do have party labels. But here's the question: do they coincide it with, the runoff election? Because I don't think there's any way they could put an election together quick enough to be on the primary ballot.
Yeah.
Or do they just go ahead, since the person is not going to serve in the legislature, could they just go ahead and hold it in the general?
And what does the law say, David? Eric Johnson was asked that very question by the AJC. He didn't have an answer. He didn't know.
It's one of those kind of things you have to look at the rule book. I love to take shots at people like Eric Johnson, but I will give him a little bit of a pass. It's one of those things, oh, I know there's a law. Let me go read the book since I don't have to memorize it.
Yeah, well, at least he didn't say something stupid that turned out not to be right.
Yes, that's what they teach you, being a teacher. If you don't know an answer, don't just say something. Say, I don't know, but that's when we have books to find out. We go learn.
But you hit on something, David, at the start of this little talk about this. We didn't recruit very well for the state Senate races, did we?
No. State Senate and state House, there's I've heard people say, oh, well, the state Senate was a little better. Oh, the state House was a little better. We tightened the map up a great deal. And I understand that, the funding's pretty, scant this year, so we had to tighten the map on who we're going to target, but to actually just put candidates in, given that this year is going to be a special year with just an unprecedented turnout, it would have been a good year to take a few chances.
Especially in light of that new presidential poll we just saw, man, that could swing a couple of races down.
Yeah, it could.
Exactly. Yes. Well, it's been a great show, and I guess if everybody will join us for our Thursday special Blue Carpet Edition headed up by Catherine Smith at, we're going 6:30 to 7:00
on Thursday.
On Thursday, and then, of course, the next 2 weeks it'll be Catherine and Tim, along with Scott Aikman and anybody else that calls on in. We do have some guests lined up, so should be a good deal. But I'm glad y'all joined us, and hope to do a little more Texas political talk with better experts than ourselves. See y'all next week.
Thank you.
All right, good night.
Good night.